Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for coming. I want to say welcome to the call, and I hope everything's going well in your Commonwealth schools. We think about you all the time. We pray for you. We're always hoping for good things for you, and we're always excited to get your mentor reports and stuff. So. Remember that we're here. I'm going to just start by reminding everybody of our three remembers. Remember that the scholar letters are diagnostic tools. And I'm just going to rephrase that. Remember that you can take the scholar letters and you can diagnose problems and you can diagnose where your kids are in the scholarship letters and what they need. Remember that your training isn't over. So please keep sending in your mentor reports. I know this time of year gets hectic. People get busy, and some people get burnout. But it's so important to send those in still because we can help you. So when you're having your troubles and stuff, ask your trainers. If you're not getting response from your trainers, you're welcome to send a note to registerlemmy@gmail.com and let me know that you need an answer to a question that you haven't gotten an answer from, and I'll either follow up with your trainer or I'll send you an answer. Somehow we'll get you an answer. So please let us know if you need an answer to something. And then remember the LIBOR cycle is hard, but also remember that it's worth it. I know that right now is one of the hardest times in your school year, but when you come out the end of your school year, you are going to be a changed person. You're going to be changed for the better for all the work you've put in on your projects and on your Commonwealth schools. And so it's hard, but you're close to the end of the school year, so keep with it. And I know everybody's trying to figure out next year right now. You're starting to, like, I got on the call immediately. Marissa asks me about training questions, which is awesome, meaning that she is there. She's like, she's preparing for next year. She says, my Commonwealth is counting on me doing this, and they're counting on me, you know, getting the early bird price. And I just want to say hats off to her and all of you guys who are there at that place, working so hard to get it together for next year, because it's going to matter. It's going to make a big difference in how things go.
Right here, and just introduce you for a minute, because there might be a few people who just don't know you specifically. Angela?
Thank you.
Just to introduce Angela, she is an awesome trainer for Shakespeare. I've attended her training, and it is wonderful. She's done it for how many years now, training Shakespeare?
Oh, I don't know, like
at least more than
10 or something.
Yeah, a lot of years.
Christy, that's what I'm going to go over.
She has a lot of experience training, and she does a great job, and she lives in communities where they built from what, just small, large, and they worked the program and had a lot of success with students. And she can tell you more about how to ready for it here. But you guys are lucky to hear about it. Awesome. It should be a great.
Thank you, Rick.
Conference muted.
I unmuted you, Rick. I muted everybody, so I hope that's okay. I am going to open for questions at a couple of different points today. So if you have questions about training and about putting your plan together for next year, please get them ready, because we want to hear them and we want to get you there. We want to help you. And thank you, Rick, for the introduction. I'm also training for Sword of Freedom and Hero Project. So you may have had me for that, or you may be going to have me for that. And I love training for Lemmy.
She has trained Hero Project for quite a while now. She's the author of that project. Awesome.
Thank you, Rick. So I want to, I know that you guys are starting to think about next year, and if you're not, now is the time when you can think about next year. I want to start by talking about choosing your scholar project, because that's the first thing you need to look at. And I know Marissa and Jennifer Jarrett, they're talking about it because before we started the call, they were asking me about specific ones. And I want to say how, I want to just kind of touch on how you do that. I know that I was really lucky that I was able to be a part of two foundings of Commonwealth Schools. I was at the very beginning of my kids' scholar phase. The group that I was with, they started a Commonwealth School, and I was blessed to be on the board and on the Constitution Committee and to kind of be with the first wave of them. And I learned a lot, and I had some really great mentors. And then when I moved away and started my own Commonwealth in a different area, I know that I really needed their help, and I went back to my mentors, and a lot of them now are Lemmy trainers or owners, and I asked them questions, and they were there for me. So hopefully I'm going to do a decent job of sharing what they've given me and what I've learned through my experience. And like I said, in a minute, I'm going to talk about three things and then open for questions and comments. And then I'm going to talk about a couple more things and then open it once more for question and comment. So the first thing is choosing scholar projects. And what I learned from my mentors is that the scholar projects need to reflect one thing, and that is what your scholars need to continue in scholar phase. What they need to be challenged and what they need to move forward. Now, there's a couple of, sometimes the trainers or the mentors, they have projects they really want to teach and they have projects they really want to take training for, and so that's what they teach. And that's great that they're inspired, and they really want to work on their education. But when you choose them for your Commonwealth, you want to look at your scholars and what they're ready for. Another thing that happens that is not the ideal is that one thing that we need to do is we need to make sure when we choose our scholar projects is that we are not just choosing the easy way out for our kids. If we have kids that have a desire and are really interested in taking quests, they don't have to be perfect at practice scholar classes, because practice, if they're in practice scholar, they're not perfect scholars. That's just the way they are, and that's why they're in practice scholar classes. So if they haven't finished the class perfectly, that doesn't mean that they're not ready to go on to quest. So you need to find out if they are ready for quest. One mistake people make is they put off quest until they're 16, or, sometimes 15, sometimes 16. I've even seen people put it off till they're 17, partly because their parents didn't think they were ready, or they heard that quest was really hard and they were afraid to take it. You want to be careful that that doesn't happen. Quest was designed for people 14 or 15, and it was designed to help people bump up their scholarship so they get better at it. And that doesn't mean they're doing perfectly, and it doesn't mean they're doing everything great and that their writing is perfect, because that's what Quest does. It helps you become better, and it helps you be very challenged, and it gradually increases the difficulty by increments. So they don't have to be ready for Quest 3 when they start Quest. they can be able to make it through quest one. That's all they have to be able to do. And that doesn't mean they're doing quest quality work. It means they have to be able to rise to that, you know, rise to that level or to be challenged to that level and inspired through it. And so please consider where your kids are. If they really are at Practice Scholar, we have some really awesome projects. And then we have some kind of transitional projects. And then we have some awesome Apprentice Scholar projects. And when they pass Quest and they get past their Apprentice Scholarship, we also have Edison. And Edison has been a real lifesaver for some of these kids moving into self-directed scholar. And it really prepares them to be a mentored scholar and to go to college or to go on with, you know, whatever their mission requires them to have as far as mentoring or apprenticeship. So look at what they need. And one other thing is if they need something specific that isn't offered by LEMI. One thing that we've done in both of the Commonwealths I've been in three total, and one thing that we've done in both of the ones I founded was that we asked ourselves what our scholars needed, and if it wasn't available, we found a qualified LEMI mentor to put something together. And they got mentored by somebody else, and they had a passion for something, for, you know, what we needed. And we had them create a scholar project for the kids and what they need specifically. One, for instance, was a few years ago, we had some kids who we knew were very close to starting Quest, but they were concerned about their writing, and they needed maybe one semester of some, you know, a project that would just bump up their skills. So we sent two mentors to training for the writing training, which is not a scholar project, but it is a training that gives your mentors a great skill to mentor kids through writing. So we sent these two mentors to writing training, and they came back and put together a really wonderful writing project so that they could have one semester of just a fun writing project with a lot of creative writing and kind of an introduction to what they would be getting in Quest. And then those kids were so on fire when they hit Quest, and they were really ready for what they had coming. So I'm just going to recommend the first thing you do is find out what are the needs of my students. And that doesn't mean, you know, oh, they really want to have PE. It means what are their needs? How can I meet their needs to help them step up on the scholarship ladder and get them through scholar phase? Because that's our ultimate goal, to get these kids through scholar phase so that they can walk away from our schools, not so they can stay in our schools forever because they love us, and we're glad they love us, and we want them to come back and visit, but we really want them to graduate from our schools and go on to do some really awesome things in the world. And we need them to get through scholar phase. So be ready to challenge your kids. Be ready to provide for them whatever they need. The next thing is getting mentors. And I'm going to tell you right now, your best bet here, and this you need to do all year, but if you aren't doing it, start today. Develop your assets. And what that means is the parents that you have in your group, you know they have a vested interest for the kids there. And you know that they want the best thing for their kids. and they're very interested in the school and how it's doing. And some of you know that because some of them complain. Some of you know that because some of them tell you, I love what you're doing with my kids. But when I, in my school, in my Commonwealth school, we kind of had this three-year plan. And I'm not saying this is everybody's plan, but we recognized that there was a pattern in the people who came into the school. The first year, the parents put their kids in school. Most often, they were very intimidated about teaching anything. They didn't want to teach anything. They didn't think they were capable, and they were afraid to. And maybe they didn't want to, you know. I mean, that it wasn't even a question for most of the people on their first year of my school. Occasionally, you get somebody who's on fire and who has a lot of self-confidence, and hallelujah when those guys come along, right, and who are willing. And but most of the time, they don't. Most of the time, they're not in that situation. So that's your first year. The second year, they've had a really good experience, hopefully. I mean, that's your goal, right? And maybe they've gone to gathering project classes, or maybe they've just been watching their kids grow. But the thing you need to do is get them involved some way. Everybody in the school should have a job, and everybody should have some interaction with what's going on in school. And so what we hope is that by the end of the first year, they're starting to really get a vision of what it's about, that they can really see the great things that are happening, and they're starting to kind of get an inkling of, I kind of want to be part of what's going on. I can see everybody serving, and I think I can do something. And we usually get them involved in juniors. That happens a lot. Sometimes we get them involved in something like being part of the Shakespeare play, you know, that they are taking on costumes or they're taking on something important in the Shakespeare play. Another thing that we do is just get them to organize events like the Constitution Bowl or something like that, you know, for Key of Liberty or something like that, so that they have their fingers in, but they're not quite 100% in, you know. And that third year, usually when we ask them if they'll be a mentor for us the following year, almost all of them will. That doesn't mean it works like that in every case, but there is a pattern that the people who are very reluctant at the beginning, usually their third year being with the school, they've opened their minds enough to consider being a mentor. So for that to happen, you need to, just what I said, develop your assets and make sure that they're included and make sure you're asking them for help. I know I've had experiences where I've done everything myself and I have had bad results, bad turnout from the parents. When you want to have the parents come and be part of the group, you need to ask them for help and you need to use them and recognize their talents and their abilities and use them for those. So when I was very early on, when I was just starting in a Commonwealth school, we were just building our first one, and it was very much in the early years of Lemmy. I think we had two people from my group, who we didn't even know what a Commonwealth was at the time, and the book wasn't out and there was no name for it. They went to Lemmy training to take Shakespeare Conquest training, and they brought it back to our community, and we were doing these classes for teenagers at the time, and they did this whole year of Shakespeare training with our kids. And my daughter loved it. It was super fun. She was super shy, and she grew a lot, and she learned a lot. And I was very impressed with how it was going for her. And I had three little kids at home. I had her, and I had three younger kids. So I was, you know, busy homeschooling, you know, my little family. They asked the Shakespeare mentors, when it got to be the play, they came to me and they asked me if I would do the lights. And what that entails was I had to be at the tech rehearsal every day, and I think the tech rehearsals were 4 hours or something like that. It might have even been a 5-hour commitment because there might have been set up and clean up and prep and stuff like that. And I was worried. I thought, well, my little kids. But I was able to get somebody to watch them. And I think my kids actually came to the rehearsal a couple of days because they played fairies in Midsummer Night's Dream, and we used the younger kids for some of the fairies. So I got to bring them once or twice. But I was with the scholars that whole time. And I kind of just didn't want, the reason I said yes was not because I was some great light person. I didn't know anything about any of what they were doing. It's just that they asked me, and these women who I admired and appreciated had spent so much time with my children over the year, you know, giving of themselves in a volunteer way, and they had gone to this training, and I just felt like they asked me to do something that I could figure out, and I needed to do it. I needed to rise to the occasion because they had done so much for my family. And but I'll tell you, by the end of the week, I was seeing so many wonderful things happen behind stage with the kids. People who were having stage fright, the kids would encourage them, give them a hug and say, you're going to be great, and stuff like this. And they were also bonded. They were also encouraging. They had memorized their lines. They had these costumes. There was a lot of laughter and fun things happening. And here I was kind of in the middle of it. By the end of the week, I knew all the lines from the play because I had my script, and I was, you know, trying to help people backstage. I had to be with my cues. And so I had this really awesome experience. And it had never occurred to me to go to training. Never. I mean, they were the first people who had gone to training from my area. It never occurred to me. But after I got my fingers in it, they waited a couple weeks after the play, and then they approached me and said, Angela, would you go to Shakespeare training? Because we need more Shakespeare trainers. We have this new group coming in. Would you do that? And I was really surprised that they asked, because I had these little kids. But I thought, well, they believe I can do this, and I do like Shakespeare, and I had such a good time. And I went to my husband, and I thought he would say it was too expensive, because at the time I paid for it myself. And he said, I think you need to do it. Give your people a little bit of time to go home and think about it. Don't say, I need an answer right now. Go to them and say, I have something I'm going to ask you, but I'd like you to think about it a week before you give me an answer. So they can go home and they can really, you know, maybe they're going to pray about it. Maybe they're going to ponder it. Maybe they're going to meditate on it. Maybe they're going to be like me and go home thinking their husband's going to say, no way, it's too expensive. And maybe their husband will say, that's just what you need. We need to do this for our kids. You know, or whatever. Or, wow, wouldn't that be awesome if you could go to training? I think your mom will watch the kids. You know, maybe their husband will say that. But give them a little bit of time to get it together and to really get used to the idea. And for me, I talked to my husband, and I thought, wow, he thinks this will be good for me. And it will be fun, and it will help the school. And I want to build a school for my other kids. And at that point, my second child was going to come into school. So that's how they roped me into it. And I won't say roped in. I teach, I train every year. We always ask people why they've come. Half the people there say, I got shanghaied, you know. And we all smile and they giggle. And it's, you know, we all know what happened, because at some point or other, maybe it happened to us. But by the end of training, I may tell you, our trainers are very qualified, and they're very inspiring, and they will, and I think you need to trust them to give your people a vision of their scholar project and of what's going to happen with their kids and their Commonwealth School. So turn them over to us, and we will we will do our best to get them into a place where they're excited to come home and teach the kids and mentor. So develop your assets. Involve your people in everything you can in your school and what you're really doing. When I say develop your assets, what you're doing is giving them a gift that they can, they're on the library cycle. As soon as you guys know, because you've been to training, the minute you get to training, you haven't even heard of what the library cycle is yet, but you've accepted a call already. You've already accepted the call, and you're already in the library cycle. And so you're helping them really get their scholarship moving. If they haven't already, they will now, because they're going to have to go home and research Gandhi or find out about, you know, mathematicians or research, you know, what the founder said about Georgics or all kinds of really wonderful things. Okay, so let me talk about training for a minute. I'm Lemmy's event coordinator, and I put the trainings together. So some of you who have asked questions about training or who've put trainings together in the past have probably worked with me or Mary Jane Bench. And we have tried to, you know, do a good job for Lemmy. We do grow, and sometimes it's a little bit stretchy when we're trying to grow. But we have this year a really easy way to set up training. We have an online application, and you can call me. My phone number is on the website. I think it's actually on the online application. You can call me, and I'll even be on the phone with you and walk you through it, and you can ask questions, and we can talk. I can tell you what dates are available and all those things. Right now, we have a bunch of we have several trainings up already. We have Tacoma, which we're excited to go there again. We have Hurricane. We have Salt Lake. We have Arlington, Texas. And we have Raleigh, North Carolina. And so we're going to some neat places. I'm also talking to some other people about trainings in other areas. We may have another East Coast training, and we will have a California training. And I know Colorado is hoping for a training. And there's a couple other places besides that that we are hoping to get into this year. So let me tell you why it's good to bring us there. I know that a lot of people go to Salt Lake, and we like having you come to Salt Lake. Salt Lake's a big training. It gives you a vision of kind of the size of the movement, because you know it's only one training, but we fill a big conference hall, like a big, not a conference hall, but an auditorium, and it's fun. Salt Lake's a lot of fun. But I'll tell you what the benefit of having it brought to your area is, if I'm going to use Tacoma as an example. I know Tacoma is up not very far away from the other places in the Northwest where we've had training. We've had training in Portland, and we've had it in Salem, and we've enjoyed going there. And Tacoma really wanted their turn, and they hosted training last year. And when we went there, I was able to go there because they wanted my projects. And I went there with Elodie Milne and Jen Wilson. And what was really cool is when we got to Lemmy Philosophy, they packed a pretty good size room. And I was kind of surprised because we had never been there before. And I just didn't know there were that many Commonwealths in Washington. But we got there and we had this good sized room full of Lemmy Philosophy, and we did have the Oregon people come out, and we were able to, you know, have a great Lemmy Philosophy. And you guys know that the Lemmy Philosophy and the writing are free to the people in your community. When you go to Salt Lake City, if you're traveling far distance to get there, it's difficult to bring people, and you only can bring the people who are going to mentor. I mean, that's just, occasionally you bring somebody else who, you know, really wants to be a part of it, but most of the time, most of your Commonwealth doesn't get to come. Last year when we went to Tulsa, Oklahoma, there's only one Commonwealth there. But Jen Wilson and Lori Cummings and a few other really awesome people brought us out there, and they put together training for two. They filled two of our trainings from Georgics and Shakespeare. And we had, you know, a good-sized, you know, room in the library full of people from their Commonwealth, of all their parents and stuff. And we were able to do Lemmy philosophy for them. We were able to talk to them. We can individualize things in Lemmy philosophy. If you're having challenges or problems in your Commonwealth that you need addressed, or if you have, if you really want them to have a certain vision of stuff for you to help grow your community, we can do that for you. You can talk to the trainers that come, and they can make sure and talk about what you need. So it's specific for your group. Of course, there are things in Lemmy philosophy that are for everybody. Everybody needs to see, and everybody needs to hear, and they're inspiring. But we can also individualize it. And so there's some real benefits to bringing us out to a training by you. Now, when Tulsa brought us out, not everybody who took training was going to teach. They weren't all going to mentor. A lot of them were just parents, and they just needed to fill the training so that we would come out. But the people who did come, like I said before, that was like their introduction to the Liber Cycle. They were on the Liber Cycle before they knew the name of it. And I know that we had some really big, wonderful moments with people in that community that are not mentoring, but just came for the training. And you know, these wonderful, they got over roadblocks. Like, I can't write. We had one lady. Okay, I'm going to tell the story quick because I know I've got to open for questions before I get to the rest of my stuff. But we had one woman, and she was just this cute little girl. Like, you know, she probably had, I bet you her oldest was in the Commonwealth School. She couldn't have had kids that were too old because she was so young and cute. But she was a native of Mexico. And so she had moved to Tulsa and had married somebody from the United States, and they had this cute little family, and they were homeschooling, and she was fun. She was really neat, and I'm from San Diego, so I actually didn't think about her not English being her first language. It really didn't occur to me because I'm around people that English is not their first language all the time. And so it didn't even really cross my mind that would be a roadblock, because she did speak good English. She didn't have any problem with that. But when we got to the writing, we had this one woman who she jokingly described herself as a grammar Nazi. And our writing plan, she was skeptical. But in the training, you know, you walk through our writing plan. And when we do the writing in class, we exchange papers, and she got this woman who was English as a second language, her paper, and she was looking at it, and we were all going to make comments on somebody else's paper as, like, practice. And so the woman who was English as a second language, she was afraid. And she was like, oh, you got my paper. And she tried to get it back, and the women wouldn't give it back. She just jokingly, you know, they were friends. They knew each other. The woman kind of jokingly said, no, I'm gonna do my thing. I'm going to write on it. And she was nervous. And I realized at that point that the woman whose native language was Spanish didn't feel confident writing in English. But she had still done it because it was part of training. And so, you know, we do hard things in training, and she had done it. And she gave it, and the woman gave it back, and it had nice things written on it, and not one derogatory or critical thing. because that's the way we roll in Practice Scholar, as you know if you mentor a Practice Scholar project. And when we debriefed the native Spanish speaker, she shared that. She said, I was afraid to write, and I didn't want to, but I decided, you know what, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do it, even if things are spelled wrong and even if my grammar is bad. And because, you know what, they don't write papers in Mexico. When she was in school in Mexico, they do have school, you know, and they are literate, but they don't write papers like we do. In fact, they don't do it very much in the United States anymore, but they really don't do it in Mexico. So she had never written a paper, and she was afraid. But the woman who said she was the grammar Nazi and was very skeptical about our writing, she heard this Spanish speaker say how she had put herself out there. She had faced her fears. She had written the paper, and then she had gotten these encouraging things written on her paper, and she really wanted to do more writing and to improve her writing, and she was ready to go and go home and write more. And it was very powerful, not only for me. I was really moved. I just thought, wow, if we didn't do anything else today, we changed this woman's view of herself and what she could do, and now she's going to go home and start writing. That's going to impact her little kids. It's going to impact her home, her whole homeschool. But she is probably a future mentor. I hope she is, because she was really fun. But it also showed this grammar Nazi lady who was, you know, I'm only using that word because she called herself that, and it's kind of funny. But she was just a nice woman who had a different view of writing. It showed her the power of the writing cycle. Don't let me present it. And it showed her, yeah, look, if we do it this way, they're going to grow. If we do it this way, the kids are going to want to get better. And if we do it this way, we've got 2 or 3 years until these kids are writing college-level papers. And anyway, it was a really powerful experience. So not everybody who goes to your training has to be ready to mentor. And you can tell your trainers, most of these people are just people from the Commonwealth. We had sign-ups so you could come. And, it, you know, that's not possible for everybody. It might be expensive if it's possible for your area because your parents are willing to invest money in getting the trainers there. It's worth it. It's worth it to bring us out. It's worth it to, you know, ask. To see, don't assume people won't go to training. Don't assume people can't afford it or don't want to do it until you ask. Because those Tulsa people, they aren't the first and they won't be the last to do that for their community, so that they will be able to have the Lemmy philosophy and also get a vision of what's going on in the Scholar Project. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to unmute everybody, and I need you to mute yourself if you're not going to talk. I wonder, Rick, do you know how to do that? I see he's still on, but I don't know if he's...
Four star?
Okay, four star. Or do you know how to raise their hand? How do they raise their hand?
Five star raises a hand, and if someone wants to try it, well, I can try it. Just a minute. I'll see if four star works.
Okay. All right. Okay, so Rick just muted himself as four star, and we actually have quite a few people. I don't know if I'm going to unmute the whole group, but I think what we'll have, we have quite a few people, so if you want to raise your hand, it's five star. And I want to take any questions you have about putting together your plan for next year. I do have a few more things to talk about, but I want to, this is important to me. I'm going to probably take a call till 8:30, so it won't be only an hour, it'll be an hour and a half. and I'll have another opportunity to have you ask questions. But if you want to ask a question right now, raise your hand by pushing 5-star, and I'll call on you. We'll take one person at a time and answer some questions. Quite often when people have questions, a lot of people have the same question. So, okay. Joy, I'm going to unmute you, Joy Petty. Joy, what can I do for you? What's your question?
Okay, so I'm the one that's the Raleigh training, and so I am thinking about how I'm thinking about how to publicize this, right? And I feel like one of the main reasons I wanted to have the training here was because I wanted these locals to have the Lemmy philosophy. Okay, so I'm excited about that, and I want to have good specifics on what to tell people because I want to sell this, you know. I want to sell this to not just the local people, members of my church that I'm used to working with, but people in the community. There's a lot of homeschoolers here, and I'd really like to sell this Lemmy philosophy training well. And I wasn't aware that the writing portion was part of it, and I'd like to hear more also about the writing portion, details of what I can say. Like when I go talk to people or send out an email to big email homeschool groups or whatever, if I'm going to say, hey, we're going to be having this training here and we're going to be have this philosophy and it's free and it's and we're going to be learning about writing and it's going to be this awesome workshop. Well, I want to know what to say. You know what I mean? Exactly.
God,
this long.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing this stuff. We're going to spend this much time on this. We're going to be learning about these things so that they can go, oh, and they know exactly what they're getting into, how long it's going to be, what they're going to learn, and they're going to be so excited.
Okay, that is a really good question, and it's probably a question that other people are wondering as well. And so I really appreciate you asking, Joy. And we're super excited to go to North Carolina. We're trying to establish on the East Coast, and we are doing the LDSHE conference this year in Maryland, which I know is not next to North Carolina, but
right. Well, that, I'm going. That's a big thing. Yeah, that's a big thing here. We go to all. Everybody, a lot of us go to it.
Everybody goes to that. Well, that's
pretty
wonderful.
Much.
So we will be doing that, and you can have them go hear Kathy Mellor speak at that. And she's pretty good. What you need to do, and what's your and Joy is, she's mentored last year, and she's starting a community. So she's right now, she's really trying to build. So these are really good questions. The Lemmy philosophy, what it does is it talks about some origins for Thomas Jefferson education. It talks about the benefits of it and where it comes from. Like, and I mean origins like it's Greek inheritance and it's Hebrew inheritance, you know, where these ideas come from. And it encourages people to get their own education. The one thing you can do is when I was building my community, I stepped in an area that didn't have anything in it as far as Thomas Jefferson education. A few people had heard of Thomas Jefferson education, but nobody was really doing it 100%. And there was no, like, any kind of organization. And so one thing that I did was I talked a lot about the kids that I taught and their experience, and I also taught them, I also talked a lot about what happens with the kids and the scholar ladders. And I talked a lot about what cool things the kids in Quest did. We didn't have Quest for several years. You know, I think it was at least 3 years. It was several years. We didn't have Quest because it took a little bit of time for the kids to take, you know, other classes and kind of get their feet wet. And I just talked a lot about Quest. In fact, I was able to get a couple of questions to come in. I don't know that you can do that in North Carolina. Some people might be able to do that. I had people come in and I had questions come in and actually do a mock oral exam. And we put them up in front of everybody, and we asked them questions, and they were poised, and it was really interesting. And that was actually, when I was kind of brought into it, I went to see an oral exam for Quest, and that really caught my interest and the interest of the community, and that's why we ended up sending people to Shakespeare training, because somebody had taught a Quest class for three people. That was the first project we had with Quest, and they had taught it for three people, and they invited a lot of us to go to the oral finals, and it blew our minds that these kids could pull this off. And even though it was only three kids, we got a vision of it. So what you're doing is you're talking to them about a vision. Another thing that I did and that I think is a really good thing when you're casting a vision is to talk about your community and what you want for your kids. And I pretty much did this unceasingly. I was always talking about my kids need a community where they can have friends, and they can have friends that want to learn. I don't want them to have a community with friends that are apathetic about their education. I want them to have friends who are excited about their scholar phase, and who want to talk about books, and who are excited about what they're doing in school. And I talked a lot about building that community and supporting each other and helping each other through scholar phase and helping each other get a better education. And I mean the adults, not just the kids. And I unceasingly talked about how, you know, and I mean from day one, when we just started the class and everything, I talked about us being a community and how everybody had a voice. And you know what? People want that. We do not have that in our culture. So, Joy, I that's one of the things you need to do. There's a book called The Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, and some of you are familiar with Malcolm Gladwell. He's a best-selling business author. And The Outliers is a book about people who lie outside the normal statistics, you know, and how, and when they are on the good side of that, maybe they made a lot of money, or maybe they started an amazing company, or maybe they're really good sports figures or whatever. He talks about the principles behind, you know, the commonalities, I guess the patterns behind the outliers. But in the introduction to that book, it talks about a community. And I want to say it's called Rosario, or it has the word rose in it, and it's an Italian name, and I can't remember the name of the community. But it's a community that started in Italy and actually moved to the United States that had a lot of, they found that they were outliers as far as health went. The people lived really long. They didn't have heart disease. They didn't have diabetes. They didn't have a ton of stuff that people were having at the time. It was the 50s. And they tried to figure out why. They thought, okay, it's genetics. Okay, it's their way they're eating. It's this, it's that. And they looked at a whole bunch of factors, and it wasn't any of those things. And they found, and if you're gonna use this to share with your community, I suggest you go get the book, get it at the library, or order it online or whatever. But read the story for yourself. But they found that the reason that they did not have health problems in this community was because of their sense of community. It was all because of their social interactions. It didn't have anything to do with their exercise or their health or their genes or any of that, because they looked at people from the community who had moved to other areas and they didn't have the health benefits. So it was just interesting how important community is to your soul, that it even will keep you healthy. I mean, I'm serious about that. And it's just super interesting, and it was a scientific study that we did in the 50s. So go and look at it, because I shared the story of this wonderful little town. It was just a little town like any other small town in the 50s. But I shared that story, and I said, that's what we're creating. You know, and I wasn't trying to say we aren't going to have diabetes because we're going to have a community. What I was trying to say was we want this community because it's going to benefit our lives in every way. And we are going to have people who love us and support us. And those people are in this room. And I have, you know, little meetings. And I had food. And I you know, prepared my words carefully. And I spoke passionately about what I was preparing. And I gave them a vision of what was going to happen with their kids. They're going to have scholar faith. They're going to be able to be a self-directed scholar. And at the time, I had a daughter, and she had she was a self-directed scholar. And next to her, we have the great books in our house. Next to her bed was the piles of great books, and she had markers in all of them because she was really crazy about the great books, and she was reading a bunch of them, and she was going back and forth and researching, and it kind of blew my mind because I thought it would be good, but I didn't think it would be that good, you know. But I was giving them all of this. So, Joy, you don't have TJ White or Quest graduates, and you may not have a self-directed scholar in your home, but you can still say, look, I've gone to training, and I know, I don't know if you know Tatiana Milne or...
Yes.
Okay. You can say, I know somebody who's gone through this, and you wouldn't believe what a great speaker she is, and she's spoken at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., at the mall, and you can say she is amazing, and she wrote scholar projects, and she came through this, and you can say I know her, and I know that's what this does to kids. So that was kind of a long explanation, but what you need to do is you need to create a vision, and you need to always be pushing that vision. Yeah, we're going to send you a flyer so that you can, you know, you can distribute that, and that'll help you. Hopefully people will read the flyer and want to come. But the more you can talk about your vision for the kids and for the community, the better they're going to get it. They're going to hear your passion, because I know you're passionate. People don't just decide I'm going to have a Commonwealth in North Carolina where they've never heard of this before and come to trainings and put together their own training unless they're passionate. So
right.
I know you're passionate about it. You just need to talk to them about your passion.
Well, this is part of my challenge, though. So I'm at the point where I am. I can be talking to the people that I actually am in contact with, that I actually see, but I feel like I want to reach out. Like, you know, the Raleigh, the East in general, they don't know anything about leadership education. They don't know anything about the concept. Am I dying? Is my phone dying?
No. Can't tell.
They don't know anything. I mean, so I feel like I'm at the part where I'm not even in, you know, in conversation with these people. I just want to send out a kind of something to sell. Hey, come learn about a new paradigm. You know what I mean? This is like talking to people that don't even know me, you know, necessarily. And I want to invite them, because like if I put out a note saying, hey, we're starting this group, you know, we're doing this class, it's kind of this project-based class and it's leadership education, they don't know anything about that. You know what I mean?
I know.
And I want to be able to say, come learn. And I think the selling point, I think the writing portion, which I wasn't even aware was part of the free deal, might be also part a selling point, because that's like, come to a free seminar on blah, 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 and you're all gonna, it's part of a writing seminar. You know what I mean? I kind of want to open this up to the community to as a whole and say, learn about a new idea, a new way of educating.
Absolutely. That's what you want
to
do.
People. Yeah, I don't even talk to these people normally because I don't know them. I mean, I'm going to be reaching out to people I don't know that I'm on email groups and stuff with, on homeschool groups, on, you know, on Yahoo or whatever. But I want to be able to sell this to have people who might not know me and might not be talking to me anyway. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I have like, and you say you're sending a flyer, and maybe it's all in the flyer. Maybe the flyer is going to just be this, have it all in there, but I just want to know enough to say, there's going to be 4 hours of this and 2 hours of this, and this is what we're going to be doing when we go do there, so that people go, oh, that sounds really cool. Oh, well, I'm going to arrange a babysitter so I can come. You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
That's the kind of thing. I want it to know enough to be able to tell them enough that they're excited and they want to come because it's going
to
be something.
Well, we used to charge quite a bit for the Lemmy philosophy. We used to charge a lot of money for people to come there, and and we stopped doing that because we wanted to build your community. So you can say, you know, this is worth this. It's worth quite a bit. I don't know if Rick knows exactly how much we used to charge, but it's worth quite a bit of money. But they're doing it for free because I'm putting together these classes here, and they want to help me get it together. And that's exactly the truth. We are doing it for free because we want to help you with your community. And you can tell them that it's worth money. That, I don't know, sometimes that'll make a difference to people, sometimes it won't. And tell them that they're going to get a free writing training in a new organic way of learning about writing. But I'm going to tell you, Joy, the more people that you can talk to personally and tell them what it's going to do for their kids specifically, their family, that's where you're going to really convert people. We can, you know, you can try to hook them with the whatever you're going to say in the emails and stuff. But if you can find people who are connectors, people who know a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And you know what? They don't have to be like, there are people who are just naturally like that. That's another book, The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell, who talks about the different kinds of people you need to make something, you know, be an epidemic. And one thing is a connector, people who know everybody. And they might not even be super friendly. They might not even be they might be weird, or they might, you know, you, it's not like they're going to be the most popular, but they know everybody somehow, and they just are connectors. And some people are naturally connectors, and you talk to them and you give the vision to them, and half your work is done. So find those people.
That sounds good.
The people who you're really going to bring in, who are really going to buy in 100%, are the people who you give a vision for what it's going to do for their family and what it's going to do for their kids. And tell them that they're going to get a free writing seminar. Yes, tell them that they're going to learn about this new kind of education. But also tell them what the product looks like, what the end result looks like.
Okay.
You're going to have kids that are going to love learning, and they're going to be willing to do the hard work to get a really good first class education for themselves. And that's what it's about for us, is getting the kids to that point.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right, that's good to
cast,
keep in mind.
Cast your vision everywhere you go.
but
especially
to
those connecting people.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for your question, and I'm really glad she asked that, because I know that is something people struggle with, that. But we're here to help you, and when you have specific problems with casting a vision, you can ask us. I mean, you guys all have trainers, you guys, right? And you can ask those questions. But I'm glad Joy asked that. So thank you, Joy.
Anybody else
have a question about putting together training? Okay. Wow, okay. Well, are you sure, guys? Not only putting together training, but helping to get your mentors, or helping to choose your scholar project, any of that? Nope. Okay. Well, okay. From here on, you can raise your hand anytime you have a question. I want to help you guys. I'm going to tell you, as far as your end of the year. So today we're talking about. Figuring out for next year. And one thing that I think is super, super important when you are getting ready for next year is figuring out how you're going to end your year this year with your Commonwealth School. Hopefully your goal has been this year to make sure everybody has a wonderful experience. They all are growing and learning and being challenged, and that your community is becoming strong, and that your community is bonding. When you're going to end a year, that's how you're going to end it. You're going to make sure you end your year with fun, with love, and with bonding. And, you know, if you guys are doing a Shakespeare play, that really helps. There's built-in bonding in the Shakespeare play. There's built-in fun, and there's built-in love there. So you're good there. But there's also some other things you can do. I was lucky in my Commonwealth school to have a parent who also became the chairman, who also now is the Lemmy trainer for our Key of Liberty. Her name is Heidi Christensen. She had this vision of doing a gala at the end of the year for these purposes. She wanted to end the year with something that brought us all together where we could celebrate what happened that year. And so she put together this gala, and, you know, I'm a native San Diegan, and we are casual people. I went to the opera like a couple of weeks ago, and there were people like in jeans and Crocs. I mean, there were a few evening dresses too, but San Diego is on the casual side. And so I didn't quite have the vision of the gala until I actually went. But it was so wonderful. I know that there's probably some Utah people on here who really know what gala looks like, but I did not. And she wanted to have this gala, and her vision of it was that we can do all the awards at the gala, and we celebrate the kids, and we break bread together, and we dance, and there's music and fun and love and bonding. And that was her vision. And so we did that. We did all those things, and it was so much fun. We did a slideshow of all the year and all the fun stuff that happened, all these pictures with music, and we were all excited about the slideshow. Our Quest graduates got to get up and give speeches. They were short, but they were awesome. Each mentor got to get up and give their awards, and everybody clapped for everybody. And some of the girls like made fancy dresses, and everybody came dressed nice. I even dressed up, even though, you know, I was trying to get into it, you know, and I dressed up fancy, and because my kids were really fancy. And you know what? We left that year just loving each other and so excited for the following year, so excited for what was coming our way. And so that's one option, is to end the year with a gala or some kind of activity that bonds you, brings you together with love and fun. Food is always good. Breaking bread together brings you together, right? But a gala is a good idea. It took us a few years to get to the gala level, I'll tell you right now. At first, we were just hanging on by our fingernails. Some of you guys know what I mean. All of you guys probably do, especially since we're in the middle of March. And there's fingernail, you know, hanging on by our fingernails everywhere sometimes in March. But we always have a parent meeting at the end. And we usually have food. We break bread together. It's potluck or, you know, snacks to share or whatever. And then we also have a beach day. Not everybody lives by the beach, but we always go to the beach so we can hang out together. Everybody brings, you know, whatever they think is necessary for the beach, an umbrella or chairs or their own surfboards or boogie boards or whatever. And then the kids just run wild, and they're all together having a good time, and the parents are all talking, and it is a bonding experience. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of fun. But I know some people do potlucks in the park or they go to the lake, or whatever it is in your area that you guys can get everybody to do that's going to be some casual, fun time where you can just talk and be friends, I suggest you end your year on a happy, happy note by doing something like that. Whether it's a gala, whether it's a, you know, a beach trip, whether it's a park potluck or meeting at the lake, do something where you can get everybody together and really enjoy each other. Because your community needs some bonding. That's part of what we do. We need bonding. Another thing I'm going to suggest for you to do for next year is plan some things for the summer. And that doesn't mean the chairman has to do it or the executive board. And it doesn't mean if you're so tired because you've been doing a lot of work for your class and you really need time off, it doesn't need to be you, but you can talk to your parents and you can encourage people to plan some things for the summer. And what I mean for that is maybe a book discussion night where everybody gets together, you guys order pizza, or nachos are fun or whatever, some kind of food, because kids have to have food. And then they discuss the book, and, you know, they're going to spend the first half hour on the book. And then they're going to hang out and, you know, play games or whatever it is. Another thing is getting together for movie night, maybe something to do with one of the classes that they had that year, or a new movie that came out that's related to some of the Commonwealth stuff. But get together for movie night. I know my group, the kids all like to get together and go to the premiere of the movie, so like The Hobbit or one of the Harry Potter movies. You know, I know these already happened and maybe some of them are really old, but they would get together and they would put it out in the loop and invite whoever wanted to come and talk about the theater and what showing they were going to do, and they would all go together. And it doesn't take any kind of effort to organize that. You put it out there and whoever shows up, shows up. And it doesn't have to be anything official, but do some fun things over the summer. Hopefully over the summer, you guys already have some built-in things like trips. If you have a Shakespeare class, you might have a trip planned to go to a Shakespeare play. Or I know with our group, we go to a Shakespeare play and we go to a water park. Sometimes we have gone to a Renaissance fair or medieval times or something like that. So those Shakespeare trips, for Key of Liberty, if everybody does everything for our Key of Liberty, one thing that we did was we have an amusement park that is that has an exact replica of Independence Hall where they sign the Declaration of Independence. And so they go to see the Independence Hall at Knott's Berry Farm, and then they spend the rest of the day going on rides together and have dinner together afterwards. So hopefully you guys have some built-in activities that are linked to the things that you've done this year, your projects. But you don't want to go all summer without seeing everybody. I know some people are busy. They've got, you know, camps and family reunions and family vacations, but it doesn't have to be a big thing. Like I said, you can say, we're all going to meet at the movie theater. We're all going to meet at, you know, the park or the beach or whatever. And then you want to do this before the end of the year, okay? You want to plan for your beginning of next year. And you want to start next year with the same thing. You want to start next year with a bonding activity. And you want to involve as many people as you can. It's always good to in multiple ones. I suggest you have multiple ones. You might have one that involves the whole family. Maybe one, you know, hopefully you'll have a parent meeting for the parents, which is a good, you know, make sure there's some time to hang out and talk and share stories and stuff. And hopefully your parents from last year will share the vision with the new parents. So you want to have parent meetings. You want to plan that now so that people so that it's locked in stone and people know they have to go to that meeting. You know, we always do a not back to school party. Sometimes it's the beach, sometimes it's at somebody's pool, sometimes, you know, it can be at the park, it can just be whatever. And that's always fun. So it's just a get together to see everybody again, meet the new people. Doesn't have to have a lot of structure. One thing that we do often at that meet, at that party, though, is our executive board interviews all the students. And we don't take a ton of time. So maybe you have three people on your executive board, right? And you just spend a couple minutes with each student and you say hi. You know, sometimes you don't know them. Sometimes you know them for 4 or 5 years. And if you don't know them, you introduce yourself. You tell who you are. When I ask just a couple of questions. What are you excited for? What classes are you taking this year? What are you excited for? What are your concerns? Is there anything you're afraid of or worried about? And I ask them some of those things. I give them a little pep talk, and we let them go. I mean, it's really just a couple of minutes, less than five. And we split the kids up between us, and so everybody at that time, I also have them turn in their parent and scholar contract. So we usually have a contract that they sign saying, yeah, I'm going to be respectful, and yeah, I'm going to wear my pants above my underwear so my butt is not hanging out, or whatever your, like, dress code is, or your behavior code, or whatever. I have them sign a contract, and they are supposed to bring it to the party. And if they forgot it, I have extra. And I say, okay, you signed this? Okay, now take it to your parents and have them sign it and bring it back to me. And I try to get them to have a contract turned in before the beginning of the year. I don't know how many groups do that, but I know I've been in two groups that do that, and it's a good idea. Because when it comes down to if you find somebody's cheating and they've signed a contract at the beginning of the year saying they wouldn't, you know, or whatever it is, you know, if you really want to dress code or you really want, you know, a certain behavior standard, if they've signed something that says I will be respectful to my mentors, to the other parents of the other students, then when you meet with them for discipline or whatever, you can say, look, you signed this contract. This contract also affords you the opportunity to have people be respectful to you. Sorry, excuse me. So that's one thing that we do. We have a party. We do interviews and contracts. Another thing that is a really good way to begin the year, and it doesn't have to be before the year starts. It can be, or it can be right after it starts. It can be a month in or even a month and a half, 2 months in, but to put together a youth conference. And if you just have a very small group, you're just beginning, like Joy, a youth conference doesn't even have to be an overnight. It can be a one day. We decide kind of way ahead of time, like before the end of the year or the previous year, and what day it's going to be. So people can know what day that's going to be, and we try to pick a book that they can have a book discussion about, something to give them a little bit of vision for the coming year, or even a vision of their own education or what you think they need. It goes back to individualizing it for your group, what you think your scholars need, and maybe even your parents. And have a book discussion, have some great games, have some unifying activities, maybe do a service project, maybe have a vision casting activity, maybe have a simulation. All those things can be really, really fun. And it's also a good way to get new parents involved. Say, okay, yeah, we need everybody to participate and to be helping. If you're not mentoring, there's other things you can do. You can help with our youth conference. I know we've had parents who have started out by helping with the youth conference and then, you know, offer to be treasurer. And then, yeah, eventually they mentor classes. So it's a little foot in the door for developing your resources, which are your parents and the members of your Commonwealth school. So
make sure you have a plan for the beginning of next year. You don't have to have all the details now, and you don't have to have all the details before the end of the year. But if you can have a theme picked out and maybe a book and maybe a date, you are ahead of the game. You know it's going to happen. You know what the email is that you're going to send out is going to look like. And you're going to start with everybody spending a whole day together, or maybe 2 days if you want to do an overnight, and getting to know each other very well, and starting with a kind of a fun, starting with a bang, and starting with love and bonding. And then when you're doing, your mentors a great service by putting that together, because when they get to the classroom, if you've done the youth conference ahead of time or even at the beginning of the class, they're warm, they're ready to discuss with each other, they're not afraid to talk in front of each other, and they kind of have a shared vision of where the school's going, and they have some common language, and they have some common, you know, they've read a book that they can compare to what's going on in the class, and to me, and there's just a lot of neat advantages to that. All right. Once again, I want to just see if anybody wants to, if anybody has questions. I see Jennifer's got a question. Jennifer, ending in 0813, that's your phone number. Oh, is this Jennifer Jarrett? Okay, I'm unmuting you.
Yes, it is. Thanks, Angela. My question is, our school is pretty new. We're in our third year of having scholar classes, and I'm just wondering what is the ideal path for an individual scholar to take with the LEMI projects that are offered? In hearing about all of them, our board feels like we would like all our scholars to have the opportunity to take all of them before they graduate and go off to college, and we're just trying to figure out logistically how do you map that out for them. I think I know what the right order is, but I'm not positive. I know you need to adapt and customize to individual needs, but like what is the ideal, and then how do you manage that with, like, we would probably always have 2 years of kids in, well, that's one of the things. In the beginning, our first, the practice scholar classes, because you take practice scholar classes for 2 years, apprentice scholar classes for 2 years, and then self-directed classes for 2 years. So you're going to be potentially having kids in different years together. Like, I know you can rotate, you could do Shakespeare and Key 1 year and then do Shakespeare and Sword of Freedom Hero 1 year and rotate that back and forth, but all kids get a chance at them. But from what I understand, Pyramid and Georgics should really come before Quest, and you don't really want to do Quest before Pyramid Georgics, so you can't really rotate that. And I'm wondering what the ideal is and how schools sort of deal with that. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, and I'm glad you asked. It is a common question. We do kind of have this LEMI continuum where it starts with, like you said, it starts with practice scholar classes, which are the ones you mentioned, Shakespeare, Key of Liberty, Sword of Freedom and Hero, and Pyramid. And then the apprentice scholar classes would be the big apprentice scholar class is Quest. And then after that is Edison. I'm going to say this about Georgics. When I talk to the creators of Georgics and the new Georgics is really cool. It's really interesting. There's a community by where I live where I actually teach art in their community. I don't teach it in their Commonwealth school, but a lot of the people in their Commonwealth school come to my art class in their community. And I've heard all these things, all these wonderful, cool things about their Georgics class and how it's going. And so I'm going to say this about Georgics. It can be taken at any time, and it's a really good thing to involve the families in. So that, I don't think, fits in a specific place on the continuum. And it can be a family class.
So it, in fact, it's really good for it to be, for you to get your family involved in what's going on in that class. And so it's good for the dads. It's good for, you know, the family projects and stuff. That doesn't mean it can't be taught. It is definitely a Commonwealth project. So, you know, you have your Commonwealth Day, you have your Georgics class and stuff, but it's just a really good one to bring in the family. And it can be adapted to any age. So that, I thought, was really cool. I was super excited to hear about that with Georgics, because I just think because of the content, that makes it a really neat thing to do with a bunch of different ages. So that one you can kind of plug in anywhere. Now, I gave you the names of the three, and you gave me the names of the, you can take Shakespeare with another class because of the way that is. And actually, in our Commonwealth School, we have done Pyramid with another class. So we've had like another class in the morning and then Pyramid in the afternoon. And that's worked out just fine. Although I think the recommendation is that you take those one at a time. But one thing that you're going to have to remember, Jennifer, is you want to do what's right for your kids, and it doesn't have to be the same for everybody. So if you want everybody to take Camp Liberty is kind of a bedrock class, and it's a foundational, especially, you know, for building citizens and promoting liberty. So say they take Key of Liberty the first year with Shakespeare, and then they take their second year of Shakespeare, and maybe you decided to do Pyramid because you have a lot of kids that are really interested in science or who you wanted to really inspire in science and philosophy and math. And so say you did Pyramid that second year, and then they're ready for Quest. I would not say they have to take Sword of Freedom Hero. And just vice versa, too. If they took Sword of Freedom Hero and you didn't have time for Pyramid, I wouldn't say they have to take Pyramid before they're ready for Quest. I would give them Quest as soon as they're ready. And this is the reason, because the purpose, if you look at what our end game is and you look at what our goals are to move them through scholar phase so that they get to a point where their work is a higher level. They're willing to take mentoring. They are. They have better writing. They have better presenting and speaking. They have better, you know, all the things that we learned, the better discussing and reading. And so really that's your goal, is to move them through scholar phase, because it's not the content of the class that's important. We do think the content of these classes is important, but the whole purpose of it is to move them through scholar phase, to get them the skills and the abilities, the vision and the mission to be moving forward in their education. If they miss Sword of Freedom Hero, that doesn't mean they're never going to learn about the Civil War and World War II. What it means is that when they get to learn about that, it's going to be at a higher level. So I suggest you get them Quest as soon as they're ready, as soon as they can handle it. And this is the reason, because there's this pendulum.
Can you clarify how you know if they're ready? What skills do they need to have to be ready for Quest?
That's a good question. One big indicator is they really want it. That's one big indicator. Another big indicator, and this is the pendulum thing, is that the kids go between, they have this big brain growth at when they hit puberty, and that bumps them into scholar phase. It gives them some skills that they didn't have before, some abilities that they didn't have before, like the gift of rhetoric, and so they're able to discuss and argue and persuade, and they're able to do those things, and so that's when we start doing discussions with them. And so what happens is when they come into scholar phase, they have a lot of initiative, which means they're ready to start choosing things for themselves and making some decisions, and they want to go forward for themselves. It also sometimes it looks a little defiant, but it isn't necessarily defiant. It's like, I want to be independent. I want to learn. I can do this for myself. I want to choose, right? And you guys probably know what that looks like because you have a kid that has gone through an independent phase, and it has to do with their development. It's a developmental thing. Well, then they go into this, and then they go into a phase where they are willing to be mentored. They're willing to submit to a mentor. And that's when you've got to get them for Quest. They have their little independent phase, and they start going
forward in
the scholarship.
How do you tell that they're willing to submit to a mentor? Like, how would you tell in their behavior that they are ready to submit to a mentor?
That's a really good question. Well, I can tell you probably, so Jennifer, would you probably be able to tell if they're willing to, or if they are in initiative phase and they're kind of individual and wanting to choose for themselves stuff? Can you recognize
that?
Yeah,
I think that's when
so that's pretty easy,
right now because we're still
right?
pretty new. Yeah.
Okay, so that's a pretty easy one to recognize, especially as a parent. You know, you see
mm-hmm.
the toddler throw their tantrums. They're in an initiative phase. they want to get dressed by themselves, and they want to choose their favorite clothes, the flowered shirt and the plaid pants to wear together. That's initiative. And teenagers kind of go through that too. You get a young person in their teens, and they will have those kind of things too, where they want to choose, and they want to do it by themselves, and they want, you know. And they're an initiative. They're not going to submit to a mentor at that time. When they start asking, you know what, I really want help with this. You know what, will you look at my paper? You know what, say I want Quest. Then you can actually have a conversation with them. I mean, these people are now old enough so that you can have real conversations and real talk, right? You could say, oh, you want Quest? I really want you to have Quest. But do you think you're ready to submit to a mentor? You know, you have to get a writing mentor for Quest, and they're going to look at your paper.
How do you do it when you're at the very beginning of your school and you've never had a Quest class before? How do you vision cast that for? None of us have been to Quest training. I think we will ideally have one person go to Quest training this year, so we'll have at least one adult
awesome.
Who has a clue about what the class is. But we don't have any students that have been. How do you vision cast it for that first group of students?
Great question. You have a meeting, you know, and it's a kind of an interest meeting for Quest students, and I always have food if there's kids coming, you know, and so they come, there's food, they know their friends are coming, and you present what the class is about, and you tell them about the class, and you tell them these are some really neat things, and we're going to learn about these guys, and everybody's going to have their writing mentor, and we are going to do some simulations, and at the end we're going to do this really amazing court simulations, and you guys are going to write a law brief, and it's going to be hard, but you guys are going to rock it, and it's going to be awesome, and who wants to sign up for this? And you tell them it's hard. I tell them right off it's hard, but when you finish this, you are like doing college work, and when my kids graduated from Quest and then they went into college was a breeze. It was a breeze next to what we put them through in Quest. But to tell them, it's about having a mentor, and it's about helping you, you know, get better. And if they want that, number one, people who are in the initiative phase and are in practice scholar, they're not that interested in that. They want to have fun with Shakespeare, they want to play the games, they're willing to listen to 17 plays, you know, on their audio or whatever, that, you know, to get the prize, and so they're starting to do the hard work, but they kind of want to make the choices, they want to decide, they want to write opinion papers and tell you what they think, because, you know, that brain growth, but they aren't really excited about submitting a lot to a mentor. They've had a little taste of it, you know, they're listening to the director in the play, and they've got a mentor, but the people who are ready for Quest listen to you tell them about the hard work and all the neat things they'll do and about the oral finals, and they kind of want to be there. They're like, wow, and they kind of know they're ready. The kids have a desire, and they hear that they have to submit, and they're thinking, yeah, well, that's going to really help me grow, and I want it. So I have a meeting, and I ask whoever. We had a problem in our group where the parents just didn't get a vision of, I want my kid to do this early. And so they wanted their kids to do it late when they were back in initiative where they should be. And, you know, self-directed scholar takes some initiative. And so we had a problem where the parents were holding the kids back until they hit that time. And then they're in initiative and they don't want to submit. And it's backwards, you know, it's hard. And we had a couple people go to training, and thank goodness for the good Quest trainers, gave them the vision, and they went home to our training, to our Commonwealth school, and they had a meeting, and they invited everybody who was 14 and up who hadn't had Quest, and they presented it to them, and they said, this is what we're doing, and we think you guys are, we're going to give it to you because we think you can do it. And then they just watched to see who bit the bait. And, you know, they got a really good group of kids. It's a really good group of kids because the kids kind of know they're ready. And they're willing to agree to being mentored and to submitting and to the DAs and all the things that are submission. And they're ready to submit to it because they know the outcome. And they're developmentally ready. So you have the parents come to that meeting, and the kids, and then the parents see that their kids are excited, and your vision casting saying, this is for kids who are ready to submit, and we're going to help you move through scholar phase. And you know, you might be 14 and a half or 15, but by the time you graduate from this at 16 or 17. You are going to, you know, you're going to be such amazing scholars. And so you tell them what it's going to be like, and the parents like it. The kids like it. But if the kids want it, to me, that's a big indicator. And if they're willing to agree to submit, there's another big indicator. You can work with bad writing, and you can work with, you know, you can work with somebody who's too shy to present. You can work with some of those
things.
In terms of
skills that they need, like we have a few scholars, we've some scholars who can totally write a whole page paper, but we have some that are even like 14, 15 who can't barely get out a couple of sentences on paper. I would think that's an indication someone's not ready for Quest. They need to really be able to write, right?
Not necessarily. You could say it. Sometimes they just haven't done it because they haven't been challenged. And you know, some kids are ready to challenge themselves, and other kids kind of need the mentor to challenge them. So if you really want to know, you can say anybody who really wants to take Quest, we want a whole page paper on why you think you're ready for Quest or why you want to take it. And so you challenge them to write a one-page paper, which doesn't take that long and is not that difficult, especially if they've had a couple years of practice scholar classes. Most of them can do it. Some of them, it's just their personality not to always push themselves. That's why they need the mentor. So that's one way you can see if they're willing to rise to the occasion once, they can do it.
That's great. So we have one scholar I'm thinking of in particular who is, I think, 15 now, and this is his first year doing scholar projects, and he's doing Sword Hero and Shakespeare. And he has some serious learning disabilities that I think have contributed that, plus his parents not quite understanding leadership education and knowing how to help him with that. He's, you know, he's doing his first scholar projects now, and so he would be, I guess, in probably the willing to submit area. But next year, the classes we would offer him are Pyramid and Georgics. I don't see us being able to do Quest next year because I don't really think we have him, maybe one other student that could possibly handle Quest next year. And I'm worried, are we going to be messing this kid up by not giving him Quest. I don't even know that he'd be ready for it. From a really
suspicious
standpoint, that's where he's at, but...
And so he's not ready this year. You're sure he's not ready this year?
For this coming fall?
Yeah.
I wouldn't think so because he's one of the ones that really struggles to write. But he has come a long way this year. I mean, at the beginning of the year, we were getting nothing. And now we are getting more. And he definitely, I can see the signs of him wanting to be mentored and submit more. He's come a long way. He earned a sword, which we were all shocked by. We weren't sure that he would actually pull that off. And he's taking a big role in our Shakespeare play and is working really hard on that, and that's been exciting.
I would seriously consider putting him in Quest this year. I would talk to him. I would talk to his mom.
I mean, he'd be the only one.
So, but I thought you had, didn't you say you had somebody going to Quest this year? So he's the only one who would be ready?
Yeah, we were hoping to have one person go to Quest this year, and then she would next year go to the writing training and be our writing mentor so that we could offer Quest the year after.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not going to say you're going to mess them up. I've taught several kids in the initiative phase in Quest, and it's not that they can't do it or won't do it.
It would be, I guess that would be his second year of being in that. He would be probably 16 when he started Quest.
Yeah, that'll be challenging because he will be an initiative. Yeah. So you have two options. You could have him just personally mentored by the one person, by your Quest person.
Mm-hmm.
I know people who do that, and, you know, it's not ideal, but it's also, it's just individualizing it. It kind of goes back to the thing that I said where you have to look at what your kids need and try to get that for them. It might be good for your mentor, too, to have that experience. And they might not do it during school. Maybe he takes something fun with the other kids, and maybe he does Quest on the side. But I would consider it. I would consider that as a possibility, and I would talk to him and his mom and the Quest mentor and come up with the best plan for him. And it might be waiting till next year. And that, I'm telling you, it's happened in a lot of places, and it's fine. It's just not ideal. It, you know, you do better,
mm-hmm.
and you get them when they're ready to submit.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess there's always kind of prices to be paid for the first year or two of scholars that when you're getting your program going.
You definitely aren't the only person with that problem, I'll tell you. If there's anybody who's remotely close, you might get a two- or three-person class together, and that would be great. So,
there's maybe one other kid who might be able to handle it, but I also think that they really will benefit from Pyramid and Georgics. I'd really like them to go through that first.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking we'll just have to do our best to modify for this one student and just do our best.
I think that's what you have to do. And you know, prayerfully consider it or meditate on it or whatever. I wouldn't decide right this minute. I would really think about it. And I would really think about the other kid. If he is ready, then you've got a two-kid class, and that might be the best thing for both of them. I mean, then they're going to really have a buddy, you know, that they're going through something hard with.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll think about that. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer. Anybody else have a question? I know we're over time. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I enjoyed doing the calls. I enjoyed talking to you today. And I will, if you have any more questions, you're welcome to email me at registeredlemmy@gmail.com. And if you want to start a training, if you want us to bring this out to your group, talk to some of your parents, talk to, or, you know, if you know right now you need to do that, please call me. My number is 760-807-9679, and I'll get you set up. We'll come out. We'll bring Lemmy to your community. Okay? So everybody have a wonderful weekend, and hopefully we'll hear from you. And good luck with your end of the year. I know you guys are doing good things in your area.
We appreciate it. We enjoy having you come and talk. Thank you for hosting this call for us and for the mentors out there.
Thank you, Rick.
Bye. Goodbye, everyone.
Okay. Bye, everyone.